Hey, Jeffrey.
Hey, Jeffy.
Welcome to Hey Jeff, aka Hey Julie, podcast about Survivor, Big Brother, and
everything in between.
The culinary arts, Danielle. You just said you had lunch. I need to hear about it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So we record this at like 1 p.m. Eastern time, the most important time. And I always come into this podcast with like a drink. I always need to stay hydrated. But I really took care of myself. Sometimes I do this podcast hungry, which is a terrible idea. Not today, my friends. Today, we went to a special sandwich shop in Toronto called Lambo's. Lambo's Delicatessen. That specializes in making these massive honkin' sandwiches. I got the Italian trio. It came on a toasted sesame roll. Very light.
Mario. Luigi. Mario. Waluigi.
It had that's the trio. It had mozzarella, a delicious arugula, but like mixed with vinaigrette.
Yes.
It had soprasette. It had prosciutto. It had it all. It was incredible. So I ate this huge sandwich and then I came on to meet Brett and I was like early, which I never am. As Brett has said, I'm never early. I'm usually exactly on time.
Yeah.
which is late
in my book, but continue.
But I was early today. I was here before Brett. I had to wait for Brett. And I said, we need to start recording immediately because I need to go take a nap after that sandwich. I also have my Topo Chico as my fun little drink today. I've had the best, most fun morning out and about, seeing the sights of Toronto, getting yummy snacks and treats. And so I'm in a great mood right now.
Yeah, I think doing the podcast hungry is probably better than post-lunch. I'm going to have to really bring it today because in 20 minutes, you're going to be like, I don't know, I didn't watch Survivor. Yeah, whatever. Okay, yeah.
I have a more meta thing to say about Survivor.
Good, then let's get into it. Survivor happened, episode 7, double tribal.
You don't want to talk about your morning at all?
I just got up.
Okay.
I had eggs and toast. I'm finishing my coffee. I had half a coffee. I topped it up to full, so I'm gonna have 1.5 coffees today.
I'm gonna be nuts
at the end of this pod. I'm gonna be nuts.
Okay. So my thing that I did special this week for Survivor. Last week I talked about how I wasn't on my phone except for during the commercials. This week, this is honestly like a social experiment. I recommend everyone try. I put my phone, I live in a stacked townhouse. I left my phone upstairs. I was like, I'm not going to be on my phone at all. I'm going to suffer through the commercials. I'm going to let my mind wander, but I'm going to watch Survivor intentionally, thoughtfully. So that's what I did to watch Survivor this week, guys. No phone whatsoever. I did watch it. I paid attention. And after the episode ended, I said to myself, you know what? Survivor is a pretty good show. When you pay attention to it. There's all these people. I was like, oh, you know what? I like him. I still don't really know any of their names.
Who do you like?
But I was like, I like Tevin.
Yeah.
I like Q. I was sad Tim left. I thought the blind side on Soda was incredible.
Danielle suddenly like the Tim defender.
Yeah, I am. Because I thought he was very adorable when they were doing, by the way, the balance challenge. I mean, I would still be up there. I could do that for hours. I would have won so easily. That looked so easy.
Pelt them with stuff.
Pelt them, exactly. Or like do it, especially on a day like they showed the clip from, I forget what season, but how it was like really rough waters. It was almost unfair where they just like couldn't do. I mean, yeah, if there's rough waters while you're trying to balance, you're going to fall off. They should have done that. That was at least more amusing to watch.
Yeah, Jeff even was like, is this like a lake today? And it was like, what are we doing, Mother Nature?
Why didn't they have like a timer up on the screen? They had like, and Tim had to be like, what's up? What's the time, you know, to Jeff?
I don't know. I think that's an unnecessary graphic.
No, it's not unnecessary. It's like, it's an endurance challenge. So you want to see how much time has elapsed.
You know why? You know why? Because they're probably editing it in interesting ways. They don't want to show you what the time is. They don't want to match the shot to the exact
time elapsed. You do have to admit, the shot of them all on their little triangles in the water with like the mountains in the background was absolutely stunning. Oh my gosh. I was like, wow. They busted. Do you think it was drones? Like, how do they make it so beautiful?
Oh, yeah. No, they have like a whole drone
department.
Yeah, like so many of the shots, especially in the competitions, are all drones now. Especially like these big sweeping stuff or like stuff that's like flying up and down. It's drones.
Because they couldn't be in the water because the water would be like upset. You know, it would have caused waves and they'd fall off. So, yeah, it had to have been drones. Anyway.
I bet they have little boats.
Little putt-putts.
Yeah, they have little boats with a guy on it.
Maybe. A camera. Well, I just thought to myself, well, maybe I should put my phone down to watch things more because it really heightened my enjoyment of this episode. And I thought to myself, this isn't a bad cast at all, actually.
Meanwhile, I have my phone out a normal amount and I'm like, it's fine, season of Survivor.
It was still a long episode.
Yeah, the 90 minute, like, I don't know if we can get that back again unless, like, they really find the hit with something else.
Yeah.
And that show needs 2 hours. Elizabeth?
Like, which I'm going to watch. I need to watch so I can report back to the pod on how Elizabeth is. Like, I was watching it with my husband, obviously. He was like, because we get all these ads, like, for TV shows that... are for ads on TV shows on Canadian networks, right? But they're not necessarily made by Canadian networks. But they all just look so generic. So we were playing, we were like, let's guess who made this show. There's one called All American. Have you seen ads for that?
Okay, that might be just a Canadian show about America. I've never heard of this.
It might just be like exotic TV.
Let's do what we think Americans are like.
It's incredibly,
I'm going to eat a hamburger and kill my wife.
Football. Yeah. It's like high school football or maybe college. But it's like, it was the most incredibly low budget looking show. And I was like, this might be a Canadian made show about
it is.
You might be right. No, we looked it up. It's CW.
Oh, okay. So well, then
we
I
got
would
a lot
have
of
no,
ads for that.
I have no, then I have no
but it's
awareness
American.
Of it. Yeah.
And then there was this show called House of Gods, which was about like an Islamic family, but you don't really know like who they are. It's definitely about Islam. Like they talk about that, but it's like, but what else? And so we looked it up and that was from an Australian, it's from ABC, but the Australian ABC.
The Australian ABC.
Yeah. So that was another random one. And then there's Elizabeth. And I'm like, well, I know Elizabeth. Trust me. Elizabeth
welcome
is
to
primo.
New York.
Yeah.
Well, you know it's on CBS because at some point in the trailer, someone says, welcome to location of the show, which is something that they do all of the time. I must have done this rant on this podcast before. In the Elizabeth trailer, which must be in the pilot episode, at some point, a cop goes up to Elizabeth and is like, welcome to New York.
Yeah.
Famously in East New York, RIP, Jimmy Smith.
Yeah, exactly. Well, she's from Chicago, Elizabeth.
Welcome to East New York.
Yeah. So those are the ads we got.
The ad, the trailer, the promo for the first episode of NCIS Australia, someone says, welcome to Australia.
Wait, they don't say, welcome to Australia, mate?
Oh no, she does. She does say in a very like stray and like welcome Australia sort of thing. So like she doesn't say mate. I bet there's a lot of like mate. Like oh
yeah.
What are we doing after we catch the robber today, Charlie? Oh, we're gonna go have some. We're gonna go down to the Barbie. I bet it is chock full of the most basic Australia references. You know they made that show because like Australia gave them some like massive tax break. They're like, hey, CBS.
Oh, we do that all the time.
They're like, do you want to watch it? Do you want to like shoot your show for like a quarter of the price here? And they're like, yeah, sure. What garbage can we like put set in Australia? Sure. Yeah. The NCIS crew. They have a secret office in Australia. And it's like, that's why that happens.
We do Matt that May. Too. Canada does that too.
Matt May says, remember the Australia promos were upside down. They were teasing it. This is true. There was like
I don't
a
remember
week,
this.
There was like a
That's
week
so
on
funny.
on like CBS where like it's upside down. I'm like offended for
the video
Australian
was
people.
Upside down.
Yeah, literally.
I love that. I would have been the exec who was like, green light it. Yes. I love that. That is so funny. That is so funny. And it gets people talking. People never forget.
Many
like Matt
people are talking on April 13th, 6 months after this show came out,
exactly.
about the upside down promos. Many, many people are saying.
That's good. That's just good marketing. Okay, back to Survivor.
Okay. we pick up the episode from the one prior to that. Venus had one vote cast against her, which like Charlie says it was him. Was it even Charlie or was it like?
It was him.
Oh, okay. I thought
it
might have
been
she
was wanting
Mariah,
to get him
person.
Out. So he's kind of okay to do that.
And you know what? It's not an opportunity for Venus to get upset if Soda isn't around. So immediately Venus and Soda just like start bickering about all sorts of stuff. This is going to be like the Venus and Soda like episode.
Well, it's kind of, well, yeah, because now it's over, which was sad. I mean, I'm assuming everyone watched and they know that Soda was blindsided and is gone now. So now it's not going to be the Venus and Soda show anymore, unfortunately.
No.
Because I loved the way she left. I mean, let's jump ahead. I love the way she left.
Explain this to me.
Okay.
As a woman, because they do not like each other. These people do not feel alive unless they're fighting with each other. Like,
they bickered constantly. They were like sisters. I don't have a sister, but they were bickering constantly. But I've been around sisters. I know sisters. My best friend's a sister. but so they were around each other constantly, always in each other's hair, always fighting, like had beef with each other, were trying to get each other out. And then when Venus got Soda out, it's just like a grudging respect. It's like, they loved each other. They like even it was. It's the type of thing where like Venus and Soda could bicker and be mean to each other like that. But if someone else tried it, they probably would have defended the other one. You know, like you don't talk to Soda like that. Only I talk to Soda like that. You know, I loved it.
Okay, I mean, I loved the final tribal for like other reasons, but the one thing that I was like, what is like these two women do not like each other.
They
do,
love
they're
each
oil
other.
And water. And then one gets the other one out, and it's like, I love you. You are the best. I'm so
but
proud
it was,
of you.
Pissed.
Oh, my God.
She was being the bigger person. She was pissed and upset. I mean, that was really raw. I loved it. It was so raw. Because I was like, oh, when she got up and she went to, like, touch Venus, I was like, oh, is she going to, like, throw something? Because that was a very raw. She was truly blindsided. But she gave her a hug. She was the bigger, she was truly the bigger person after being so insanely blindsided. I mean, she thought it had an effect. I actually was kind of hoping that the redhead with glasses, the Elsbeth of that tribe, would get blindsided because I did not like her too.
Liz?
Yeah. Yes.
Liz, third place, mark it down. Third place, no votes. Mark
her
it dude down.
Mark of like, it. She didn't even bring her bag. And like, oh, what? I was supposed to go talk to you just because you want immunity? Like, she had a two that I did not appreciate.
Liz is entering, I very reluctantly entering Brady All-Star status.
Well, yeah.
She's the capybara. Like, there's like only four people to vote out and like no one considers Liz. And she's just like hanging there having various tree nut allergies.
Well, But that's the thing, Brett. That's why I was like, oh my gosh, I paid so much attention to this episode. That's why.
When this you took a limitless pill before this episode, i.e. putting your phone in a different room.
Yes. I mean, it's powerful to do. I should have left it in a
different
Limitless
room too. Limitless, the TV show on CBS. I have limitless a Limitless
T-O-O.
Pill for you. Just like maybe don't have your phone out. That's like my Joe Rogan Alpha Male podcast. It's like, don't be on your phone.
Because Liz was not involved in any of the scheming and discussions that we saw before the tribal. So that also, and that paired with the fact that she was so, confident without bringing her bag, I was like, oh, is there actually going to be like a fun blindside on her? Because she just hasn't been part of this episode. It would be a fun blindside for the audience. Unfortunately,
they never do. They never do the full audience blindside. They give you like two or three names to expect, and then they will strongly suggest that it's going to be one person, and then they'll blindside you, the audience, as well. Even though there must be conversations where everyone decides. There must be, 100% of the time there must be, because this is how it works. Like people, they talk to each other. Like if they have to leave for tribal at 5 p.m. So we'll walk over to that little set over there. Like they might only show you stuff until 4 p.m. This is just like Big Brother too, where it's like they turn off the feeds at like 9 a.m. On the day of the eviction. For me, the thing that really stuck out about the soda eviction, or whatever, what's the word? We're not soda evicting addiction? People. No, eviction. I do have a soda addiction.
You have a soda addiction.
No, but we evict people in Big Brother. What do? Right. We banish. We
They're
send
dismissed.
Back to real life. Like, what would they say on like Flavor of Love? Like, you do not have the flavor of love.
Your flavor is profile is different. what he's like, pack your things and go. He's like, what does he say? What does Jeff say? He's like, soda, you're...
He says the tribe has spoken.
The tribe has spoken.
You know, when the tribe speaks.
I was going to come up with some alts. So what he said, I couldn't even like, I could not remember.
The 46 tribe has seasons in, you're like, oh, what's like the most iconic thing that he says?
I couldn't remember. Oh, you should have let me go. I would have come up with some good stuff.
Yeah. You went from survivor to survive not.
You did not survive. Jeff had some fun in this episode.
Jeff's having too
a little
much
too
fun.
Much fun.
Jeff needs to go back to making like 30 grand a year.
Yeah, exactly. He needs a little. He's
hosting
his
Rock and Roll Jeopardy or like on VH1 when it's like Survivor off season. Man is too comfortable.
Do you remember Roger Lodge?
No.
Okay, Roger Lodge looks a lot like Jeff Probst. And he hosted, I forget if he hosted Blind Date or Eliminate, but he hosted one of these like really trashy early reality shows.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
I think they need to bring Roger Lodge in. Blind Date. And let him host a couple episodes of Survivor and just let the audience decide if we should go in a new direction or not. Just let Jeff feel a little fire on his feet. I liked the moments during the challenge where Tim and Q had like some repartee with Jeff. I did find that funny, but I don't know. Jeff needs a little like, he needs a little fire. He needs to have his passion relit. He's walking through the motions.
The Bob Lodge socials are just off the hook. I'm sorry.
Roger Lodge.
Yeah. Oh, tell Roger, me, not Robert.
Roger Lodger. Roger Lodge.
Former host producer. He's just like former. Not doing this anymore. He's into sports. He's a sports guy. He hosts Angels pregame shows. He has
Angels in the outfield?
Yeah, like the Angels LA? In the outfield, okay. Their actual team. His pinned tweet is a much younger picture of him with Bob Barker. And it says, RIP, Mr. Barker. Thank you for being so kind.
Aw.
Pinned tweet.
At least it's not a pinned tweet of like January 6th. Like, great loved day. It.
A perfect phone call.
Wait, where was I? I was talking about actual Survivor. If you can believe it.
Oh, yeah, I forgot our Survivor. Number one Survivor fan wanted to talk about Survivor.
I was just talking, I guess, about like how. Oh, I was saying how Jeff was going through the motions. Even at Tribal Council, where he famously says the tribe spoke, get out of here. Even then, Venus was like, Jeff, can I answer a question prematurely? And he was like, okay. Like, he didn't even have to ask a question. Yeah. Venus was like, let me just tell you right now how I feel. You know, I was like, Jeff doesn't even have to ask questions at Drybull anymore. The people just talk. They do their thing.
Yeah, well, especially when you got Venus, which is like, I need to talk about Venus. Teflon. My girl is Teflon. Yeah.
We love it.
Everyone hates her. No one likes her. She is not particularly a good Survivor player, which maybe I'm going to be proven wrong because, like, when she wins or whatever. She's not particularly good. This is now the second week in a row where she is, where there is a situation where only half of the tribe can vote, right? Or no, the full only half of the tribe is eligible to vote, right? Last week it was like everyone could vote, but only like five or six people were eligible to be evicted, to be spoken out of the tribe. And then this one, they obviously split it into two, right? And it sets up for Tevin and Liz, and who are just like sick of Venus. They want to get her out. It makes tons of sense to get her out. Everyone wants to get her out. And Venus tries to tell Maria. She tries to tell, like, Venus is bad at reading people. She completely spills all of her beans to Maria, who's just like, okay. Yeah. Well,
yeah. Thanks for telling me.
Thanks for telling me. Like, throws out Tevin's name, all this stuff. Tevin, God bless him. He's like, you know what? I've been really tight with Soda, but also, like, everyone really likes Soda, and she's probably like a much more likable person than Venus, and people are going to want to vote for Soda over Venus at the end. He wants to orchestrate this blind side. Meanwhile, Venus feels like she's doing the same thing as well. And this is what I loved about the tribal, is that Soda gets evicted. And I really do feel that this was more like a Tevin Maria decision. Yeah. Like, they were orchestrating it. And Soda, because Soda and Venus are, they're the Batman and the Joker, the people. Soda gets up and she's like, was this you, to Venus? And Venus is like, yes.
I love it. Tevin's like, what
Tevin,
the hell?
And it comes to Tevin, and Tevin mouths, no. So take this credit, is what I love about Venus.
Yeah.
Amazing character. Put her on everything. She's Forrest Gumping her way to the end of Survivor in, like, the best way possible. She is a quite chaotic player. At every move, she kind of accidentally makes the right decision, but does so in the wrong way and while upsetting people and making more people dislike her, but to the point where they're like, oh, well, honestly, this makes me hate her more, but I actually want to keep her around because she's so distrustful. I can absolutely beat Venus at the end. And now she's got to the end, this is the second week in a row where an eviction happens, or whatever we want to call it, banishment happens. And now, publicly, there is a narrative that has been spoken out loud where Venus was the orchestrator of Soda's exit.
The mastermind.
She's the mastermind, which might bite her or whatever. But it's like, she didn't really do much. I love this moment, Venus and Maria. Venus goes, she's checking with Maria that they're not having great conversations. Is it something with me personally? Maria, yes. So this is what I thought was so funny, is like, Soda gets voted off. Venus takes credit for it without actually doing so, and this upsets everybody else. Venus yet again escapes. She's Teflon. She's great.
She's Teflon. It was very satisfying, because you're so right. She had, like, last week, the whole thing was, she had this plan to vote out Charlie, which blew up in her face. No one wanted to do that except her. And this week she was like, I still want to get Charlie out, but I'm going to change course. And she wanted to, I'm pretty sure she wanted to get out Tevin, right? Like, it was like between Tevin and Soda. And so, or it was between Tevin and someone else. Venus.
Oh, yeah, Venus wants to do whatever, like.
But I loved it. I was like, yeah, now she's just like, she's like a... like she's like a dog chasing her tail, or no, she's like a little fly attracted to something sparkly, and she's going to go that direction, and she's going full throttle towards it. And yeah, it doesn't matter in the end. She still wins out. She's a lucky girl. I love it. The other person I really loved this episode, and I because someone asked this question of me, and I was like, actually, I don't know. So let me ask it to you and to the listeners of the podcast. Do we think, is Q good, or is he just confident?
He's a man, baby.
Like, because I was like, I'm not sure, but I know, I said after this episode, I love this guy. I love this character. I love having him on the show. I feel like he adds a lot to it. Him, Tevin, Venus add a lot to this season.
Oh, yeah. So, we got great Q stuff. In the beginning of the episode, Charlie admits to Venus that he voted for her out, and Q is like, now he needs to give Charlie a coach talk.
Yeah.
And he's like, I love it. You don't have to admit shit to nobody. And it's like, you guys just met like 2 days ago. Like, why are you giving him the Banu talk? I mean, well, just because
right.
Q, that's what he does. He gives everyone like the coach talk, and it's great. And we're already planting the seeds. Charlie says in this episode, this is the Q show. I don't like doing things Q's way or their highway.
Right.
And then Kenzie and Tiffany, like, it's been the Kenzie Tiffany Q thing. Like, that's been, remember the Jam Jam Carolyn and the little Harry Potter boy.
Harry Potter, like, yeah, I don't remember.
There was a Elliot. Quite negative thread about him on the microblogging site X the other day. And apparently, like, not a nice little boy.
Apparently, oh, I haven't seen.
Apparently, he's more of like a Voldemort boy than a Harry Potter boy.
Oh, my goodness. I have not seen. I live in bliss, ignorant bliss.
Oh, my God. I know, but then, like, remember in the early days of this season, which feels like 4 years ago, where mm-hmm. every time there would be tribal with the purple team, it was like, Q was like, oh, I've really got to get Kenzie out. I really don't like working with her. But then they're like, right. Oh, my God, but Bonnie was so unbelievably bad. We have to get him out. There is this kind of Tiffany's in the middle, right? Like,
yeah,
Tiffany has two best friends, but her best friends aren't best friends. Like,
yeah,
then they can't like hang out together or whatever. And there was a moment towards the end of this too where Tiffany and Kenzie are like, man, like we want to stay strong, the three of us, but at some point working with Q is going to be like really a liability here. And there's going to be a time where you have to cut him loose. So I think we're planting the seeds for that.
If I was Tiffany, the choice would be clear. You know who you should actually cut loose? Kenzie. You know why?
Oh, yeah.
Because she's the prom queen.
She's close. Like, oh.
She is the prom queen.
She is the door with the boutonniere.
I mean, this like, episode.
Mr. Kenzie's father, sir, may I please?
They've already built up the fact that she has this great social game. They talk about it every episode. They've brought it up multiple times. But like in this episode, when I'm really paying attention, I'm like, oh, wow. She is like, obviously she's beautiful anyway, but like I know they need to fill 90 minutes, but like they spent a lot of time about the fact that Mr. Vest had a panic attack in the middle of the night. And Kenzie was the one who like got up with him, built him a fire. We had to spend like 7 minutes at Tribal talking about like how wonderful Kenzie was. And then Kenzie won the challenge. So she won immunity.
Def Leppard album on coconuts for him. Exactly. Ease his nerves.
But so then she won the challenge. And it's like, I'm sure everyone was happy that she won the challenge and was like, thumbs up, Kenzie. But she also got this special moment at Tribal where I think it was Q was like, I think we should all take a moment and talk about how amazing Kenzie was. And I'm like, oh my, and she's just like smiling sweetly. I'm like, she is the prom queen. Like, this is like incredible. So if I'm Tiffany, I want her ass out because people love her. People love her.
I'm sure Q's going to say that soon.
Get her out. She's way too loved. I mean, if she is that sweet and that perfect, get her out.
I'm a Kenzie fan. Like, I think she's like probably one of the stars of the season.
Yeah, she's like a rootable. Remember when we used to have heroes and villains? If they did a new season of Heroes versus Villains, she'd for sure be on the hero team. And Venus would be on the villains.
Oh, yes. That's why we root for villains here.
Yeah, exactly. We love our villains. But yeah, I couldn't... I was like, this is like the Kenzie appreciation hour. And listen, no hate to her. Good for her. But I just thought it was very interesting. They're definitely building something up with Kenzie, the prom queen.
We're still relatively middle point of the game. Like, this happens at Big Brother every year, too, where it's like,
yeah,
we're like, it's like there's like half of the contestants left. And you're like, oof. One person just like wins a lot and everybody likes them and they're very good at this. And you're like, is this going to be a steamroll? Is this going to be a Suri steamroll? Is this going to be a
right
Pauly steamroll? And it never yeah. is. It never is. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it is. I don't know. Like, you know, at the same time, like that happened with D last year and D1 just, but also I think like the cat. Yeah. Danielle's thinking,
who is D?
D is the woman who won Survivor 45
D.
6 months ago.
Can't say it rings a bell. Honestly, we'll have to look that up. I don't know.
Okay, yeah. Those might be your facts, Brett, but I'm looking at my... I'm going to do my own research here.
Okay. Do you have anything else? Can you believe we talked about Survivor for half a... Frickin' hour.
I have nothing else to say. I feel like I didn't do a good job talking about Survivor today.
Wow. And you thought you were so bullish on thinking you were going to bring the heat because I ate that big sandwich and you didn't.
I always have to bring the heat.
Usually I'm really dependent on Brett bringing the heat for Survivor, but this time I brought it, baby.
All right. We've now transitioned into our pop culture review segment. I've seen two new release films. The trailer for Joker 2 has come out, which must be discussed.
You also watched Danielle, the trailer for The People's Joker.
I also watched the trailer for The People's Joker, which I at first thought was the trailer for the actual Joker movie.
I just love it because The People's Joker was like...
You need to explain The People's Joker.
I still don't really know that much about it. I just know that it was accepted into TIFF, not this past... year the year before it was accepted into TIFF, and then I guess it like no one watched it when they accepted it, but then it ran for like a couple days at least and people were like, oh, this like is stealing property, right? Like copyright law, like it goes against all these laws.
It literally looks like it literally appears to be a student film that is just like using Batman and Joker.
Yeah, without permission and characters or whatever.
And stuff without permission, and it's like, literally copying exact like costumes and lines from the Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie, the original Joker movie, or right. not the, like the one that came out a couple years ago. I saw Monkey Man last week and this was playing in it, and you see this thing. And it's like, oh, Gotham is never going to be the same again. And my brother and I see it. I'm like, oh shit. Oh, cool. The Joker. Right. They didn't like announce Joker it. Then there wasn't any fanfare about it, but I guess the Joker trailer's out. And then you watch 4 more seconds of it and you're like, what the fuck is this? How is this a movie? It looks
well. It kind of looks like the Rob Zombie Monsters trailer. It's like very colorful and kooky.
Yeah, no, I mean, but at least the Rob Zombie Monsters movie was like filmed on cameras. Like this was like filmed on an iPhone and in like the worst way possible. And like this made me like this watching the. I'll just say watching this trailer made me a Republican. I literally went from being leftist, progressive, East LA yeah. comrade.
Welcome to East LA.
Welcome to East Los. Welcome to East New York. And I'm like, oh my God, I just want to move to Missouri now. And
well, so you're like the people of TIFF. So they pulled it from TIFF and there was like this uproar because it was like, you know, TIFF should be like, this is supposed to be a film festival for the people. Let people make art, no matter if the art upsets the corporate overlords, which I do agree with.
I don't care about the corporate overlords. It just looks like the worst movie ever made.
But so since then, that was the year that my good friend had some pass to TIFF where he was like, I can get you tickets to any show. And I was like, I want to see the People's Joker. But he couldn't because it got pulled. But I was like, yeah, get me. I know there's got to be some sort of like blacklisting, like late night screening, like get me into that one. And that like he couldn't. I still have not seen it. I totally forgot it existed until you texted me. But I just like, it was such a funny like controversy at TIFF that
you were very into like when they announced like, oh, the trailer for Joker 2, the teaser for Joker 2 is coming out on Wednesday or whatever.
I was hyped.
You're like, oh my God, I gotta see Gaga. And I was like, well, let me tell you, I have seen it already. And it's called the People's Joker. And I don't think it's not getting a full theatrical release. It's getting one of those like event releases.
Well, they must have figured out the legalities of it. I find it very hard to believe they let it in and then suddenly there was a problem. You know, it seems very weird to me, but I'm a People's Joker.
I mean, at the same time, it's like, I don't know. There's like fair use in parody and stuff like that. At the same time, like where did they get the lawyer to fight for that versus DC and Warner Brothers and stuff? I don't know. I don't want to think about the People's Joker anymore. I would rather
we'll talk see, about like, Monkey Man.
I'd rather see Minions 4 than anything else. Or do you want to talk about the actual Joker 2 trailer?
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that, but I figured you wanted to talk about a movie you actually saw.
Not really. No, my review of Monkey Man was it wasn't it, dog. I did not care for this movie very much. It's kind of being reviewed well, but it was like very, it was, you know, it kind of wants to be like, you know, these John Wick rated R like action brawler movies. You know, it's very explicit about that. He wears a black suit half of the time. Literally, the words John Wick are uttered in the film. Uh-huh. They understand the reference. I understand it's like changing the setting to be more about Indian culture and Indian like religious lore and stuff like that, like the origin of the Monkey Man character. But
let me ask you this.
It wasn't good. Sorry.
Let me ask you this because I know the name of this movie. I know Dev's in it. I know Jordan Peele produced it. Mm-hmm. That's all I know about it. So my question is, you say he wears a black suit. I really have a big problem with films where people turn into animals.
He's not a monkey man.
He doesn't literally turn into a monkey.
No, Monkey Man is like some
like Batman.
It's like Batman, but also it's like more like a character in like religious lore, like this god who's like half monkey, half man or whatever, and he like saves the village or whatever, and he like
kind of uses
that moniker and wears like the mask, but he only wears the mask for like fucking four scenes. There's really also only like two action sequences in it, and the rest of the movie is like the most obvious and boilerplate, like, oh no, the evil police officer killed my family and I have to like, and like there's all this flashbacks to like when his family died or whatever, and it's like, but it's kind of shrouded in mystery.
It's very
and
Batman. It's like,
and you're like, well, that's the thing, it's like we get 90 minutes into the movie and there's suddenly and they finally get to the scene where like they show how his parents died or something like that, and it's like supposed to be this moment where you're like, you finally understand. But it's like, I understood the first time you showed a half snippet of like his mother crying and being like, no, or whatever. Like,
right.
And we're going to keep coming back to it the entire, it wasn't very well written. You know, Dev Patel directed it as well. Some of the action stuff is really engaging. When the action stuff works, the movie works, but like, really the rest of the movie, there's just like not a whole lot going on. And where I kind of fell on it is like, this wasn't smart or good or well-written or well-conceived enough to be something that kind of pushes that genre of like elevated action brawlers forward. Right. And it also wasn't dumb enough where it was just like, you know, a Jason Statham movie. Like I haven't seen The Beekeeper, but this Beekeeper movie is like people really like, cause it's like fun. And he's just like, well, here's the honey, and then like punches someone's face off, you know, like it was like really in the middle. It was really in the middle. It wanted to be more elevated. It wanted to be more emotional. It wanted to have this catharsis in it. It wanted to, but it was so obvious that it was like, it was just like, oh my God, I've seen this movie like 8,000 times, and not in like the good fun way of like, I just want to watch like a Bruce Willis movie or like, boring, you know, like, so it was really not snoozy for me, dog. Some of the shots looked really cool. Some of the fights were really cool, but there kind of weren't enough of them for a 2-hour film.
Hmm.
Well, again, also this movie should have been
95
minutes. Come on.
Oh, give him an extra five. Puts on the monkey mask.
He punches.
I don't know if I'm going to see that. I don't know if it's like the things I'm most hyped about right now, Joker 2, Folie à Deux.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously. The trailer came out. It was just enough. It gave us just enough of Gaga and Joaquin falling in love. And music and dancing. It's going to be so good. It's going to be the best.
I'm there.
Oscar for Gaga. Already, I'm going to tell you right now.
Yeah, I don't know if this one's going to be an Oscar film or whatever.
Supporting. Like,
oh, wow.
That, I'm psyched for that. And then this should come as a surprise to no one. Challengers. I got to see Challengers.
I don't know. Like, I want to be in on Challengers. Like, I think Challengers is going to be a thing. Everyone's going to be like...
Yeah.
Something about it looks a little like reality TV drama for me.
Because they're young and
like,
hot.
Because they're young and they're, yeah, it's just like the cast of like
Love is Blind,
my housekeeper, you know, on the in the Hamptons. You know, like I don't know. Like I'm trying to have an open mind about it. Like everyone's kind of psyched about it. Zendaya's good. Well, I'm not going to see it if it's bad.
Well, how would you know until you see it?
RottenTomatoes.com.
Oh, please.
If it comes out, it's like a 36% of Rotten Tomatoes, and I was like, this movie kind of stinks, then I'm not seeing it. But everyone's like, pretty good. I don't know, man. I also like, I'll just say, I don't like the trailer for the movie. I don't think the trailer is very good.
I like the trailer. Yeah, and I love the poster. And I love Zendaya's outfits promoting it.
Yeah, well, I guess all that stuff, like all that imagery, like I don't really like that much. Like I don't care about the outfits. Like,
pull this comment up from Sparkle in the chat. This is exactly right. Challengers is bringing the horny back to cinema, which is something we are huge proponents of.
Which is why I'm not poo-pooing it. I'm not saying it's going to be trash. I'm just saying, like, for me, I'm watching the Challengers stuff. I'm seeing the trailers and I'm like, listen. Are you guys thirsty for being horny?
Are they all too skinny? What I mean? Is that the problem?
Yeah, we need some. I need to see someone who looks like me.
Well, when I'm seeing the promo, I'm like, these kids, like, it makes them look even younger to me, like how skinny they all are. I'm like, they are
professional athletes.
Yeah, a little more muscle, a little more thickness. Like the boys, they're like, they're concave, their
wiry
stomachs. I'm sort
they're
of like,
wiry.
Yeah, I think it's because they're both British.
Oh my, yeah.
Not to shit on the British as we always do, but it's like become this running thing. I don't mean to do it on purpose. I actually love the British and I love going to London. And I've been to the Lakes District as well. And that was beautiful. but maybe it's that. Maybe that's why it's not like quite there for you, Brett.
I'm gonna check it out. Like assuming everyone's like, assuming that what I think is gonna happen is the movie's gonna come out. It's not gonna be terrible. Even if it is terrible, even if it's like Saltburn terrible, then it's actually worth seeing. I watched Saltburn. That's a horny movie.
Yeah, it is horny. That's true. We didn't love it, but yeah, Matt May says Danny likes him thick. Yeah, I like him any size, honestly, whatever. It doesn't matter. But I do think like for this movie, they're tennis players. They should be a little more muscly.
You're like Leo in the beginning of Killers of the Flower Moon.
Which I still have not seen. Yikes. Big, I call myself a movie lover. Yeah. I haven't seen that or The People's Joker. I should really get back on it. I watched, what's the other movie you watched?
Last night I saw Civil War, which I think people were really.
People are talking.
Many people are talking. Listen, I liked it more than Monkey Man. Monkey Man was a 2-star on Letterboxd. Civil War was 3.5-star for me on Letterboxd.
Okay.
It was kind of like a 110-minute like Banksy exhibit that was also like a roller coaster ride or like a dark ride at Disneyland, where it's just like,
interesting.
Whoa, isn't this fucked up? Like, whoa, look at this. It, like, look at this shocking image of like our political system in disarray and like shocking violence in the violence that you associate with pictures of Afghanistan or Iraq or Gaza or name your Ukraine. War-torn place with people crying in the streets, begging for food, holding their dead relatives in their hands, but in front of a JCPenney in Pennsylvania. Like,
right.
So, like, that's what's shocking about it. Alex Garland, I think, is a really interesting filmmaker, even though lots of the stuff he makes doesn't, like, ultimately connect for me. I think it's all worthwhile viewing because he's so good at putting, like, movement and images and sound together to make film. Like he's a really interesting filmmaker. Like Devs, I didn't think totally worked, but a lot of Devs I thought did work or at least looked really cool or felt really cool at times. Annihilation was pretty great. I liked it a lot, but I'm not going to go back and be like, oh, Annihilation's the best sci-fi movie ever. Same thing with Ex Machina. Like really strong sci-fi movies that aren't necessarily... He's not Denis, I'll say that.
Right.
But he still makes really good stuff, but better than like some of this other garbage that comes out.
Yeah.
It was more of a ride. And for me, it was a lot of really cool scenes and nothing necessarily, and images, nothing necessarily tying it together. It's kind of a very light road trip movie. They're like driving to a certain place and they get there. The last 25 minutes of the movie are fucking intense and great when they get to like the final battle,
right?
And I saw it in a theater. It was loud as hell. It is shocking as hell. The music in it is great. He does tons of juxtaposition of like good pop music from the last 40 years with horrific images of people getting shot and killed by soldiers in America. I don't know if this is necessarily like groundbreaking stuff or anything that's going to be really remembered, other than like it came out, you know, 6 months before another goddamn Donald Trump election.
Yeah. I totally agree about Alex Garland because, like, I was pretty excited for Civil War. I do want to see it. But then I was like, wait, how do I know that name, Alex Garland? I went and looked at his IMDb. I'm like, oh, that guy. My thing is, like, I don't really like any of his movies. I've seen Annihilation and Ex Machina. I haven't seen, what's the other one?
Devs was his TV show.
Oh, Devs. I watched the first episode and I was like, hell no, I'm not watching this.
Oh, my, yeah. Well, yeah, if you weren't in on that point, I got to tell you.
But to your point, I do, even though it's not for me, I do respect him, like, doing his thing. Because it's like, you know, it's original, it's interesting, it's different, it's his own thing. And I think we need more of that in the entertainment world. So I respect it, even though it's not for me at all.
No,
but
yeah.
But I do want to see Civil War.
Again, it's like, he's an interesting, thoughtful, artistically minded, like craftsman who can really, you know, he can paint an image and he can pair it with sound in a way that's among the best filmmakers right now. So it is like very much worthwhile. It's a worthy movie to see. If you have the opportunity to see it in theaters, I thought it was a really great theater going experience. This movie might like kind of fall with a thud if you're watching it at home. Mm-hmm. Like so much of this movie is, especially the last 30 minutes, is about how fucking loud it is. So much of the movie is about, or at least, you know, filmically is about the juxtaposition between violent images and what we assume to be like normal images of America. It's like putting the, you know, American dream or like the American landscape or, you know, even the landscape of like suburbia or against these violent images of stuff that we only assume we associate with
other places.
War photography of Afghanistan in 2002 and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then, so the juxtaposition of those things, the juxtaposition between loudness and silence, all that stuff is being played with there. And it's great in a theater. I don't know. It's not Dune 2. It's not Oppenheimer. Sorry.
Yeah. I do want to see it. I'll see it. I watched a TV show.
Tell me about called it.
Called Ripley.
Oh,
Ripley. It's on Netflix, which you don't have anymore?
I got it back.
Oh, you got it back. It's on Netflix, and it's among the same lines as our favorite as Saltburn, as The Talented Mr. Ripley of 1999, which is like a close to perfect movie. But it's a totally new take because it's in black and white.
Oh, wow.
And Ripley, instead of being like young, hot Matt Damon, is old, hot Andrew Scott. Like, it is weird. It's very art housey. It's artsy. It's beautiful. I mean, it's the same guy who did the cinematography as There Will Be Blood. So it's like...
Elswit?
Huh?
Bobby Elswit? Or Deakins?
Is that his name? It's not Deakins. It's someone good.
I think it was Robert Elswit then.
Okay. but it's absolutely fabulous. I mean, as I'm watching, I'm like, why am I watching this? I rewatched The Talented Mr. Ripley very recently. He plays
it was he's Robert just, Elswit.
There you go. He's just like a freaky little guy in this TV show. He's a freaky little guy. He's not that sexy. Yeah. But it's strangely watchable. It's 8 episodes long, and you're like, how are they going to stretch this story 8 episodes? But then I went and read a review because it's like, we all know the story. Spoilers if you don't. Ripley is like a poor lower class kid who gets who schemes his way into being paid by this other rich kid's dad to go to Italy and bring the rich kid back home to America so he can like take over the family business. But the rich kid is living in Italy with Gwyneth Paltrow. He's like, I don't want to come home. Screw that. Yeah. And work in the shipyard.
Yeah, I'm eating seafood every night and like living in a beautiful
jazz. Yeah.
Playing jazz and like young Gwyneth is my girlfriend and
it's amazing
sexy stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You see your Ripley is like, oh, some people just get to live like this. Yeah. I don't get to do that.
And then Philip Seymour comes in and he's like, also
don't even
cool.
Get me started. The kid, I honestly actually feel bad for the kid they have playing the Freddy in the TV version because it's just like, it's hard to compare any of these people to 1999, like Jude Law, Gwyneth Paltrow, Matt Damon. Like, it's very hard. But especially Philip Seymour Hoffman in this role, he's good in everything. I know. But he's exceptionally good in this role. And the kid they got is Sting's son. And just like, he's just such a nothing. He's like, it seems like, you know, he's a young actor. He hasn't found his groove yet. But so it just seems really unfair to plop him into this role. The only one who's Dakota Fanning is fine. Andrew Scott, I'm just like, hello, sir.
So, okay, I have a question. Yeah. I have two questions. One question, is this just The Talented Mr. Ripley over again?
Yes. This season is The Talented Mr. Ripley over again. But did you realize that Talented Mr. Ripley is actually a series of novels by Patricia Highsmith?
That was where I was going because I knew about that. I knew this show was about the series of novels and the character. I was not aware that they were doing the events of The Talented Mr. Ripley.
But only the first three.
I thought this was like after Talented Mr. Ripley and he was like older and doing other stuff.
No, they keep the Dickie Greenleaf part in it, but that's only the first couple of episodes because he kills him pretty quick. Okay. But that's why I was so surprised. I was like, wait. And then I went and read that there's more books where it's like Ripley Down Under. It's like he just goes all over causing chaos. Ripley in space. Like he just keeps going.
They made Ripley in space called Alien, unfortunately.
but I'm liking it a lot. It's beautiful to watch Andrew Scott, Andrew Hot. Like I said in the Discord, this guy is hot, even though he's a freaky little guy.
My second question was, where did they find a rock the size of Canada to place on Your Great Nation, where you, in the year of our Lord 2024, first discovered Andrew Scott. This
I know.
You glossed over that part of like, you're like, oh yeah, Andrew Scott, Andrew Hot. No, you forgot, like, you didn't mention this part. Everyone's like been wet for Andrew Hot for like a decade now. Sherlock came out. Benny Cumberbatch came out.
I never
a long time
watched
ago.
That. And I didn't watch Fleabag, which I know.
He was brilliant. Like, you watch that show and you're like, okay, yeah, I understand why America is trying to make Benny Cumberbatch a thing. Martin Freeman's obviously been a thing for a while. He's been doing stuff for 20 years. But who is this young lad playing Moriarty? Who? He has fire of a thousand suns in him. I he can't does. Tell if I want to kiss him or wring his neck.
Yeah, I want to kiss both. Him.
Maybe both.
He's so cute. I mean, but he's also got the it factor. He's got Riz. I know. Oh, yeah. I know he plays the hot priest in Fleabag. I am aware of that now. But I didn't watch Fleabag.
Like, you would like Fleabag. What's the problem?
I don't know what held me up. It was like everyone loved it so much that I was like,
yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, maybe I don't need to watch this. Maybe I'll go watch it now. But
that's
yeah,
how we feel
I do
the
love
People's
it.
Joker, yeah.
Yeah. I highly recommend it. Even though as I'm watching it, like I said, I'm like, why am I watching this? There's not that much different from the movie plot-wise, but it is so beautiful and it's, I don't know, he's interesting. So I'm going to keep watching it. Finally, I texted Brett that we had to discuss, I know we only have a couple minutes left. We have to discuss something that's in the discourse that's been in the discourse for, I don't know, 30 years now. Sex and the City. Because it recently, I don't know if it was like New York Post, I don't know which like professional takes magazine
like, oh my God.
Got someone to write. Someone from Gen Z like wrote this like first person essay about like, I'm Gen Z and I've just started watching Sex and the City. How could people possibly like this show? It's cringe. Like that's essentially in a nutshell what the piece was. Which, you know, fired up the Sex and the City discourse once again. It's like you can't go 2 days without someone bringing up Sex and the City. Was it good? Is Carrie a villain? Should she have chosen Big or Aiden? Like, which Sex and the City character are you? Like, you know, it always comes back. It always comes back. I'm just like, I can't take it anymore. Can't we all?
Who cares? That show's 25 years old.
It's just like, the just, mere
they
fact
paid
that
some
people
asshole
still,
from Vassar $3,000 to write an article in The Atlantic and like,
but
that's
it's so obvious that like, I just thought, I think the thing about like a young person discovering it and finding it cringe is totally fine and normal. That's a normal experience. Like,
yeah,
that's fine. But like, I think we as the older generation need to stop falling into this trap because yeah. Like, that's all it is. It's just a trap. Like, you don't have to defend Sex and the City. This kid, whoever wrote it, in 5 years or whatever, is going to rewatch Sex and the City and be like, oh, actually, I relate to this. And then 10 years later is going to rewatch it and be like, oh, actually, this is genius and brilliant. Like, it's fine. We don't have to defend it that much and get involved in this whole thing again.
It's a product of its time. Like, who asked us to, like, deliberate if, like, Sex and the City was, like, feminist enough or this enough or that enough.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, good on The Atlantic or The Cut or whoever put it out, because I'm sure the editor-in-chief or whatever, like senior like editor who makes the decisions around what gets published editorial on the site was like, I don't know if I agree with this shit, but people are gonna fucking read this shit and get mad and send it to their friend. We're gonna get fucking 3 million clicks on it and it's gonna juice our revenue for the month. Like, that's the whole purpose. It's the same thing when you see online the map of like every state's favorite fast food thing. Fast food.
Favorite
and it's like
candy.
California is like Buxton's or something like that. And you're like, I live in California. I've never heard of Buxton's. I must engage with this content. I must reply and say, I, sir, I have never heard of Buxton's. It is obviously in and out. That's the point. The point of that is to pick the fast food restaurant that would make locally every single person in all 50 states mad.
Angry. Yes.
And then like reply. And like, same thing with like, when people put out like top 5 lists or top 10 lists you know, magazines, news outlets, they purposefully put weird shit in there that they don't even agree with because they're like, yeah, it's gonna be good when people are like, What? Pineapple pizza?
Yes. It's so good. It's funny. It works. Clearly it works. And I'm just like, I'm sick of it, but whatever. What can I say?
The thing though. It's like, okay. Sex and the City came out like 1999, 2000.
Yeah, pre-9/11 it started.
In 2000, if someone put out an essay and it's like, why Brady Brunch is cringe. Like, who cares? Yeah. Like, why do we need to? It speaks to a fact that, like, we've completely lost culture and, like, time has collapsed on itself. The only thing that exists is the past. There is nothing new. There is no nude culture.
That's why I like Alex Garland. He's trying. He's trying to do his thing, you know?
Yeah, like, okay, that's a whole separate thing that I'm, like, not going to get into and I'm not smart enough to talk about. But, like, no one said we need to talk about Sex and the City. People like watching it because life is hard and sometimes you just need to fucking down a pint of ice cream in your jammies. That makes you
feel good. Yeah. That's familiar.
See what tricks Samantha's getting up to again.
It's true. It's true. And Skarkle in the chat, I can't wait for the articles of Gen Z discovering girls. They've already discovered it.
They did. They did like a year ago. Yeah.
And it drove me nuts. I mean, I fell victim to this one because it was like, why isn't anyone talking about girls? I'm like, everyone talked about girls. Everyone is literally everyone. We talked about it. Don't worry. We all talked about it. It was like inescapable. We talked about it. Yeah,
like literally a year ago, every single person was rewatching Girls. I took in an episode.
A jaded New Yorker. Watched Girls. I think that's all. I guess that's all. I have to say. I think we did get a couple comments, didn't we?
We did. We got a couple. We got a question. We got a question in the Discord.
We did. So someone wants to know about. So Streamyverse posted a tweet about Streamyverse is a podcast I used to do about Quibi and. Streamyverse posted a tweet saying, well, Quibi is not coming back, but Streamyverse is. See you soon, friends. And people are like, I need updates on this huge drop. The update is there is no update. There's no, like, we haven't recorded an episode or anything. We have texted about potentially recording an episode. We were going to try to, but it's very difficult.
You promoting your other podcasts?
No, here? I'm saying it's very difficult for me to do more than one podcast a week. So okay. I have obviously chosen this one over that one. I would love to do it. It's just like, it's hard to schedule. So there's nothing in the can. Don't like hold your breath is what I'm saying, essentially, even though it would be very fun.
I actually want to talk about Quibi a little bit. I know we have to go. I actually think Quibi is a good idea. Like, obviously, it came out at the absolute wrong time. But the amount of time that I sit like on my toilet, like watching TikTok, or I'm like, you know what would be great if they just like had shows that you could like check in and check out of on your phone, like Quick Bites.
You and everyone else.
It came out at the wrong time. It absolutely came out the wrong time. It was completely mismanaged. But same thing with like Vine. Like Vine was the thing. Vine should have existed. They found a different format for it. I think obviously it came out at the wrong time. Quibi, something is going to come out 5 years from now that's basically Quibi and it's going to be successful. And everyone's going to be like, hey, remember Quibi? We actually almost did this. The same thing, like electric cars came out in like 1997 and they didn't work. And now there are electric cars everywhere. Like Quibi was the first mover disadvantage. It tried doing the thing. It failed due to a number of circumstances. Someone else is going to do Quibi better.
But all we're talking about is like short form videos, right? Short form mobile first videos.
Yes, but like actually like
with produced. A plot.
with like a plot or like
narrative
videos or yeah, not necessarily like fiction. Like it can be like reality, like unscripted programming as well.
Mm-hmm. Like game shows. Yeah, I think that is a good idea. I was never against that from the Quibiverse, Streamiverse. What I was against was like the way they did it.
Yo, you started it because you started the podcast because you wanted Quibi to be good and you wanted to do content about Quibi.
But they flopped so bad. No, they did. But yeah, I mean, there's much to discuss in that realm, but we just don't have time. We don't have time.
I'm glad you're not cheating on me or leaving me.
No, I'm not. You don't have to worry about that. Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for your question. Oh, wait,
There was another question. Jump for Joy. What Big Brother player has benefited the most from the show in their real life? Parentheses, besides Dr. Will.
Christmas Abbott. No, I don't know.
I was going to say the same thing. I was going to say Memphis. Because
it's Christmas every day for him.
Beautiful blushing bride.
I don't know. Reality TV usually doesn't make anyone's lives better. I think it usually makes everyone's life worse. Yeah, Frankie.
But he was like famous before.
Like whose life did it make better? I don't know. That's hard to say.
Whoever like won a bunch of money and then deleted their social media.
Kevin, like, maybe. Yeah.
Kevin?
Like old man Kevin.
I've gotten Republican. Matt made the chat. Brett has gone Republican.
Wow. It was bound to happen.
I just don't know what that was referenced to. Me saying Quibi was good.
Were you talking about this Brett or Brett from Big Brother?
But that Brett was Republican.
All right, guys. So that's our answer, I guess. Like, I don't think reality TV makes anyone's lives better. But thank you for your question. And the Discord, again, still popping off with lots of clips from Big Brother Canada.
Yeah, if you want to get hot engagement, post about Danielle's other podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Which I don't even do. Thank you so much for joining us. We will be online until next week. Bye, Jeffy.
Bye, Jeffy.